Hello, this is Andy Bombeck, and welcome to another Mojo Music, where I'll be reading articles from Mojo Magazine, along with playing snippets of music. Please let Sun Sounds Radio know if you enjoyed today's program, or how it could be improved. Okay, as I mentioned last week, I'm going to continue reading articles from the April 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. I'm going to start off with an article about the band Television, and then How to Buy Boss Skaggs, and a classic album review of the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour. And we begin with the article about the band Television titled, Ain't That Something? After the landmark coup of Television's Marquee Moon, the New York Enigmas struggled and squabbled, yet made two more great albums and Until Now Unheard Fourth. To the end, the persevere perfectionism of the late Tom Verlaine was the group's creative dynamo, yet it drove bandmates to distraction. Tom had a vision that was not really rock and roll, they tell David Frick. It was a challenge to be unique. On March 5, 1977, the New York band Television crossed the Hudson River to open their first U.S. tour at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey. Singer-guitarist Tom Verlaine, guitarist Richard Lloyd, bassist Fred Smith, and drummer Billy Fika were supporting Peter Gabriel on his inaugural solo tour after quitting Genesis in 1975. The evening did not go well for either act. When we played, you heard people calling out for Peter Gabriel, Lloyd recalls, with an acid laugh. But when he came on, three songs in, they started yelling, Genesis! And fucked with him the whole night. Television's few fans got the worst of it. Friends of ours got up to dance, and kids threw things at them. Until that night, Television had rarely ventured above 14th Street in Manhattan, an underground phenomenon even in the city of their birth. Forming in late 1973, Verlaine, Lloyd, Fika, and original bassist Richard Hell were the most original band I've seen in New York, David Bowie raved after he saw a 1974 set at Television's Ground Zero on the Bowery, CBGB. What the Velvets never were and what Dylan could never be, all this and more is Television, wrote Alan Betrock, future editor of New York Rocker. If given the right exposure, the sky's the limit. A lot of craziness with a lot of order at the same time, Verlaine told a journalist in 1976, describing Television's special menace and majesty amid the general feral blur of New York. Punk, tribal garage swing, and dogfight guitar ballet in bone-hard treble. Emotional precipice in beat telegraph songs, and strangled vocal urgency. It was also a good description of the band's perilous dynamics. The guitarist, serial conflicts, overriding credits, and direction. Hell's dismissal in 1975, ending a friendship with Verlaine that went back to when they were still Richard Myers and Tom Miller at a Delaware boarding school. There was a failed demo session with Hell, produced by Brian Eno, then the cryptic tangle of Little Johnny Jewel, a two-part 1975 independent single, with Smith poached by Verlaine from the founding lineup of Blondie. Television finally caught their lightning to Landmark Effects on Marquee Moon. Released by Elektra in February 1977 and produced by Verlaine, with Led Zeppelin Rolling Stones engineer Andy Johns. Locked and Loaded, from 3 years of relentless practice and club nights, the band cut the title track, the LP's Epic Center, in 2 takes. Played through just as we would at a gig, Smith says. They kept the first. And here's a little bit of that song, Marquee Moon, by Television. Passaic, Television were starting all over again. We got off, Smith says, when the booze got louder than us. It didn't get better. He and Verlaine visited a radio station in Texas where the DJ listened to 10 seconds of See No Evil, Marquee Moon's opening storm of Vertigo guitar, lifted the needle and told them point blank, it's New York shit. I'm not going to play this. And here's a little bit of that song titled See No Evil. FM Rock America was completely baffled by us, Lloyd notes with pride. We didn't do anything to secure their mood. Gabriel, a genuine fan, invited Television to stay on for his UK tour. But they chose to go over as headliners in May 1977. Ecstatically welcomed with cover stories and rave reviews of Marquee Moon, in the punk-obsessed music weeklies. We were taken as already accomplished, Lloyd says, direct and unprecedented heirs to the Velvet Underground, John Coltrane, and the 13th Floor Elevators, and their experimental assurance and double guitar fury. That did a lot for the stamina of the band. Television were back in Britain in April 1978 with their second album, Adventure, when they got a package from Elektra containing new music on the label, including the first LP by a sleek art pop group from Boston, The Cars. When that got played on the bus, Lloyd says, we thought, oh, they've got a television that will sell records. There's a television they can get on the radio. It was very saddening. 3 months later, on July 29, 1978, television finished a homecoming engagement at New York's Bottom Line with an incandescent 15-minute marquee moon and an encore tear-through of the Rolling Stones' I Can't Get No Satisfaction. The audience had no idea that a few weeks earlier, Verlaine and Lloyd, frustrated with the music business and each other, both ready to quit, agreed in a phone call to break up the band. On the Gabriel tour, Verlaine complained to Melody Maker about this insane repetition of albums and touring. Doing the same thing every night. It's really destructive to do that. You defeat the whole purpose. And we've made it clear that we're not going to do it. Today, Smith says television ended the first time around for a more cliched reason. It was Tom wanting to go solo, and we had no way of making him do what he didn't want to do. For Lloyd, the headaches were stronger than the rewards, and the big no was getting to me. Tom would just say no to everything. Jimmy Rip, a First Call New York session guitarist who played on Verlaine's solo albums and tours in the 1980s, then, with the reunited television from Lloyd's departure in 2007 to Verlaine's death at 73 of cancer in January 2023, remembers the leader chiding him after one television show for using an overdrive pedal in a solo. Tom said, "You sound like a heavy metal guy. You can't use that pedal." I gave him a little pushback. "It's a great sound, fun for me." And he says, "But Jim, don't you want someone controlling the aesthetic of the band?"
Television was a band until he didn't like something, Rip says. Then it was his band. 2 years after Verlaine's passing, television are in a high season of reissues, with new vinyl editions of Adventure in Rhino's limited edition Hi-Fi series and the underrated third album, Television, out of print almost since it appeared without warning in 1992. A New York show from that year, live at the Academy NYC, 12-4-92, was pressed up for 2024's Record Store Day, along with a box set of the solo Verlaine, 1979's Tom Verlaine, through 1984's cover, and his instrumental collections, 1992's Warm and Cool, and 2006's Around, are now on vinyl for the first time with Verlaine's final album of songs, 2006's dryly titled Songs and Other Things. It's a windfall of luminous guitars and pinpoint musical risk, considering the desert spaces in Verlaine's discography, long spells with and outside television that produced no official releases. "I'm always writing, working on stuff," he asserted to New Musical Express in 1979. "I spend more time writing things and throwing them out than anything else." How much can a human being do that's so different from what any other human being does? Verlaine never settled for convention and never threw anything away. He left behind five lockers around New York City, packed floor to ceiling with 50,000 books, collected over a lifetime and offered to the public at an August 2023 garage sale, hundreds of notebooks with song ideas and lyrics in progress, and the tools of his trade, vintage guitars, amplifiers, and tubes for those amps, 7,000 of them, meticulously labeled for tone and potential. He wasn't a collector. He had plans for it all, says Rip, who helped catalog the contents of the lockers. The tubes would have a handwritten Tom note with a rubber band around it that said, "Sounds good on G chords," or a little spongy E, but great in the key of E flat. There's also a colossal archives of tapes under from home recorded cassettes to DATs and 24-track reels with revelations from across Verlaine's creative life. On a recent afternoon at his desk in Brooklyn, Patrick Duravaz, a French-born bassist and studio engineer who worked closely with Verlaine for more than 30 years and is co-executor of his estate with a guitarist ex-wife, artist Jetta Coether, played Mojo a few of those marvels, starting with a solo acoustic demo of Marquee Moon from 1973, Verlaine's signature riff and plaintive yowl sounding like a Mississippi Data Blues. An outtake from Songs and Other Things finds Verlaine in power trio mode with a taunt pop spring in the vocal chorus. And one electric piece begins like guitar soliloquy at marching tempo with elegant spirals of treble before turning into an eerie recitation about a woman in a near-death car wreck. "Things moving through me," Verlaine says in a gravelly monotone. "That's the effect I enjoy so much." You can see his mind working, Devereaux says, moving all the time, never static. Verlaine was not interested in the business side, dealing with the record company. He was interested in sound and getting the proper combination of words together. "I'd say, Tom, why didn't you put these out?" It was, "Maybe I can do four measures better with a different sound." He was really confident of the work, Drevev adds, but it's like he could not let go of things. That includes the week of sessions in December 2007 for a fourth television album, basic tracks awaiting lyrics, vocals, and guitar solos that never came. "In the last 10 years of the band, it struck me, I think I'm in an oldies band," Smith says, laughing. Like, is he one of the original Ink Spots? If we wanted to work, the venues wanted to make sure we were doing the hits. We got to play, and we got to sneak in new stuff. But I don't think we ever finished a set without playing Marquee Moon. Here's a sidebar about Television's unreleased fourth album, exclusively revealed to David Frick. "The sound is classic Television, a stately rhythm and processional chord movement in glistening treble with potent melodic implications in the space where vocals and solos would be. Another track has a crisp bass and drum stride, a thick, low-end guitar motif curling around the beat like a muscular snake. And the guitar hook in one piece, a raised eyebrow of suspicion in an impish, clucking tone, is a stark surprise. Guitarist leader Tom Verlaine, a paragon of opaque stoicism, had a wicked six-string sense of humor. These recordings, previewed exclusively for Mojo, are among the 14 instrumental tracks that comprise Television's unreleased fourth studio album. Taped by the Third Era lineup, Verlaine, Billy Fika, Fred Smith, and Jimmy Rip, in late December 2007, over the week between Christmas and New Year's Day, at a studio in New York's Chelsea neighborhood. Vocals and guitar overdubs were to be added later. "It might happen before we all die," Fika said in a 2013 interview about the album's ongoing limbo. "It's sort of laying there." It still is. An intriguing promise Verlaine left unfulfilled. Rip made his live debut with Television that summer in Central Park, then convinced Verlaine to go back into the studio with the band. The two worked together on overdubs in 2008 with Pro Tools and a laptop, Rip says. He would erase them the next day. "I'm like, Tom, just finish one song." Verlaine also went to Smith's studio in upstate New York with the same results. Tom paid for the session with his own money, so it was all his call, the bassist says. He had funny names for all the songs. Wingnut and Froggy's Dinosaur were two favorites, according to Rip. But he never said, "I got the lyrics. Let's finish this up." He liked the experiment. Television did not record Persia and the Sea, their most durable new songs, in the studio. "They were never the same way twice," Smith admits. "Sometimes we'd go over them in the dressing room, and hopefully everybody remembered how Tom wanted to do the chorus this time, including him." Smith recalls the Sea first coming up during a sound check at New York's Irving Plaza. The chorus had a C chord. "But when do we go to the chorus?" Tom would blurt it out in the middle of a measure. "Let's go to the sea." We'd barely catch it. "I don't think he minded playing Marquee Moon over and over," Smith says of Verlaine. "That was Persia. He wanted Persia to be his next Marquee Moon, but it never had the structure to put down on a record." On the road in Britain in 1977, Verlaine outlined his plans for Television's second album in Pauses and Ambiguity, an exclusive subject at the best of times, civil but guarded, as spectral in his answers as he was in his gaunt, ghostfully handsome features. Verlaine talked about atmosphere, sensations, feelings that are maybe more than emotions. "I don't know how to explain it. These are just like thoughts I'm having about one possible direction we might follow. I don't know that people will understand it. I've no clear idea of it," he said, of Adventure, recorded over 3 months that fall. "I mean, we haven't started writing for it. We were hardworking and supremely lazy at the same time," Lloyd confesses. "We had a whole other record from the live performances, songs that were in high rotation at CBGB, Max's Kansas City, and the Chelsea Bar Mothers. The Grip of Love, Breaking in My Heart, Poor Circulation, but never considered for Marquee Moon. Yet, when we got to the studio, Tom wanted to write fresh songs and drop the ones we had played for years. It was unsettling." Here's a little of the song Breaking My Heart by Tom Verlaine. We'll be right back.
chain on the back of my hand.
Suggests the older songs for Verlaine sounded too much like the first record, Lloyd's Hospitalization for Endocarditis, during the sessions didn't help. He would come in at the end and knock on some solos, Smith says, which made it harder. We weren't doing stuff that we already had down. In his Rolling Stone review, Ken Emerson summed up Adventure with a line from one of its club date relics, Carried Away. I felt the old ropes grow slack. Robert Christigan's judgment in the Village Voice was more nuanced. It's not as urgent or as satisfying, he said, but that's only to say that Marquee Moon was a great album, while Adventure is a very good one. A record of unresolved halves that came to more certain life on stage in the Marshall Stomp and Fender Fireworks of Foxhole, a song on the CBGB menu as early as 1975, and the extended Ascensions in Ain't That Nothin'. Here's some of that song, Ain't That Nothin', from the band Television, from their album Adventure. Adventure could have been a brother piece to Marquee Moon, allows Lloyd, who co-wrote The Jangling Aches of Days. His intro riff was the Byrds' core lick in Mr. Tambourine Man, turned upside down, and says the backbone of my solo in Ain't That Nothin' came from his deep listening at the time, a box set of box cello suites by Pablo Casals. But Adventure got wrangled in Tom not wanting to repeat himself. You have to play with the singer and the lyric. You can't argue with that. You can argue with almost anything else, but not that. Adventure briefly had a title song, an upbeat John Lee Hooker-style groove, that was in the set list when Television opened for Patti Smith and John Cale on New Year's Eve 1976 at New York's Palladium. Adventure was on the album, Lloyd says, until Tom decided it wasn't. Smith believes Verlaine made that decision after we played it for the president of Elektra. He said, well, that's a toe-tapper. That was the end of that song. Verlaine held on to the title. I hear the good parts, Lloyd says, of Adventure now. Other times, I think about the difficulty we had doing songs that were new,
going out on a flimsy diving board. And here's a little bit of the song Adventure off the album of the same name by Television.
Shoveled our faces, laughing like fish. Ready to tap, never had that wish. You say, look how that ceiling is down. You said it five times with that beautiful frown.
Tom had a vision that was not really rock and roll, Smith contends. He didn't want pop fans' pop hits. He wanted a guitar band, and it was a challenge to be unique. For his part, Verlaine professed no regret about ending Television after Adventure, mentioning another studio, Audiocrat, during a 1980 Rolling Stone interview. Todd Rundgren used to say, it's so much faster to do it yourself. Like on Let It Bleed, almost all the guitars are Keith Richards. A decade later, Verlaine changed his mind. To be honest, I don't think he cared much about doing Television again, says Drivez, one of the engineers on the third album. He knew that people liked it and wanted it. So fine, I'll do it, but I'm in charge. I don't think words are capable of describing music in any sense that will convey what it's about, Lloyd asserted on a spring afternoon in 1992, as he and Smith broke the news of Television, not yet done or titled, in a downtown Manhattan bistro. Verlaine, highly allergic to the circus act of record promotion, was not there. More questions, he said at the start of one interview. More things to avoid. If you were going to describe REM's Losing My Religion, or Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, or U2's Mysterious Ways, Lloyd went on, what would you say? Oh, it's swirly, or grungy, or pristine? Well, we've got all of that, he boasted, and it's driving. The comparisons were telling, all from recent multi-platinum albums. Television had been out of sight since the heyday of Saturday Night Fever. But at the first rehearsal for their third album in December 1990, it was 5 minutes before everybody knew that we were still a band, says Lloyd now. He and Verlaine had not played together or spoken since the 78 impasse. Fika, a jazz enthusiast from Delaware, who followed his high school friend Verlaine to New York, and the Neon Boys, a pre-Television combo with Hell, joined a new wave pop group, The Waitresses, in 1980, and hit the jackpot drumming on their holiday perennial Christmas rapping and MTV fave, I Know What Boys Like. Smith stayed close to Verlaine, touring and recording with him through the 80s. He also played bass on Lloyd's 1979 LP, Alchemy. Billy thinks he's Evan Jones, Rip says fondly, but Tom relied on Fred to be the center. The reunion was Verlaine's idea. It wasn't like his solo records were doing that well, Smith points out. And there was a concession. Television was largely composed from scratch.
out of those jams, the bassist said that day in the restaurant, referring to the practices that continued into 1991. Somebody would play something and that would trigger a response. We were able to turn some of those ideas into songs. On the album, the writing was credited as Songs, Tom Verlaine, and Music, Television. That has been further amended for reissues and archival releases. Lloyd, Smith, and Fika are listed and compensated as co-writers with Verlaine. The schematic remains the same, I acknowledged in Rolling Stone, reviewing Television after its release by Capitol Records in September 1992. But the spaces they've mapped out are dark and tight, full of claustrophobic menace. The tense crossfire of the guitars in 1880 or so, the stark grace of No Glamour for Willie, disrupted by Verlaine's soloing in a riptide of changing tones. Lloyd's guttural manic slalom at the end of The Midnight Creep, Call Mr. Lee. This is Television in deceptive restraint, packing the widescreen tensions of Marquee Moon into a haiku-like confrontation of stabbing twang and vibrato shiver. The track was pretty much done, engineer Mario Salvetti says, of Call Mr. Lee. It ended up just Richard and Tom in the studio. They were back and forth. Tom got Richard worked up to the point where that solo, Richard did that in one take. He was on fire. The desolate landscape of rhyme, Smith's distant cannon-based notes, Verlaine's muttered vocal, and Lloyd's elegant guitar theme, all suspended in rubbery echo, was a studio ad lib that turned a corner when Salvetti, in the control room, was playing with a reverb unit, he recalls, just goofing around, not realizing they were hearing this in their headphones. Suddenly, the tempo was beginning to move, slow way down. Everybody got simple, playing to this reverb sound. That became the song. In retrospect, says Lloyd, Television is not a heavy record. It was about the earthiness. It's another place, another fragrance. It was also unfortunate emerging as Capitol was distracted by the easy money to be made off Garth Brooks. The pressing plants, all they did was manufacture Garth Brooks, says John Teffler, Verlaine's and Television's longtime manager. Television, the ultimate New York band, had no records in Manhattan. By then, Verlaine had moved on, making Warm and Cool, a hypnotic instrumental roulette of psychedelic surf, country, dreaming, and occasional full-blown freakout, almost simultaneously with Television. There are moments when the seductive curvature of Verlaine's melodies and the intimacy of the production evoke the poise and shadows of Verlaine's first appearance on record, soloing on Hey Joe version, the 1974 debut 45 by one of his closest friends and biggest fans, Patti Smith. Much of Warm and Cool was improvised. On the spur of the moment, says Dravaz, who played bass. Television's The Rocket was actually something I played when we were doing Warm and Cool, Tom said. Remember that song? I changed it a bit. That's okay. We were just goofing around. Maybe it's seen everything as one giant song that you can take pieces out of, Verlaine offered in 1993, which then also become songs, like taking a piece out of a puzzle and making that into a puzzle. Other studio recordings from the period later surfaced on Around and Songs and Other Things. Television, in turn, became an irregular constant, reuniting in 2001 and introducing new material in performance with odd working titles, Squaggle, Balloon, Soul Dance, 2000. Most didn't last. Persia was an enduring exception, a mutable, ragga-like trip, like a perpetually restless marquee moon that could run to 20 minutes at different tempos with changing lyrics depending on the night and Verlaine's mood. Smith remembers this song emerging in 2002. It was never planned with or with any structure, Lloyd says. It was one of my favorite parts of the show. Persia remained a nightly excursion for 20 years, ironically outlasting Lloyd. In 2007, ahead of a June 16th concert in New York's Central Park, and 33 years after television first walked onto the low stage at CBGB, the guitarist announced he was amicably severing all ties with the band after that show. "We weren't working enough," the guitarist says bluntly. "I loved playing the music. We had new songs, but nothing was happening. I had a new solo album, The Radiant Monkey. I was proud of it, and I wanted to do something with it." Lloyd never made it to Central Park, hospitalized with pneumonia. Rip stepped in at Verlaine's request, with reservations, he concedes. "I'm thinking television, Central Park. Either people aren't going to give a shit about me, or someone's going to hit me with a bottle." Television, in fact, achieved vintage transcendence. "I wrote reporting on that day for Mojo." Verlaine said nothing on stage about Lloyd's exit or Rip's future with the band. There were no television gigs for the next 4 years. People were like, "Oh, you're in television," Rip says, laughing. "I'm like, I think so. I thought I was." In late November 2013, television played two shows at Rough Trade in Brooklyn, their first local appearances since Central Park. On night one, they went long on Persia, debuted a song called Dog, gone after two more airings, and excavated a nugget-like slice of Hell-era antiquity, I'm Gonna Find You. That was brand new to Smith. Jimmy should get credit for that. "He found a live recording," the bassist says. "Even when I saw early television before I joined, I never heard that song." On February 4th, 2020, television played a party at a Lower East Side bar run by a friend of Rip's. "The set was the same as always," he chuckles, "mostly marquee moon. Then COVID hit. It was incredibly poetic that the band ended where it began." Verlaine died 3 years later, as diligent in his privacy while he struggled with cancer as he was in protecting the quality and sanctity of his legacy. His dying wish, Smith reveals, was that anything that wasn't published or finished, he wanted destroyed. What remains is a life that will keep unfolding in future releases. "There is a lot of material," Teffler promises. "So many live tapes, many takes that Tom did in the studio. We have 20 versions of Persia, another 20 versions of The Sea, a long spooky blues, and another thrilling feature of later tours." Rip says one idea Verlaine would always bring up was he wanted to collect all the live versions of Persia and put them all on a 2-CD set. Just hours of Persia. "He was a self-made man," Smith says, of his lifelong friend and bandleader. "I'm honored to have been an accomplice on his mysterious adventure. The music was absolutely terrific, from the first time Tom and I got together, Lloyd proclaims, I thought I had run away and joined a circus, and it was profoundly satisfying. Lloyd remembers a meeting with Seymour Stein of Sire, the Ramones label, who wanted to sign television. Tom wouldn't go to see him. He has me go and turned Seymour down. Stein took it well and made this prediction. He told me, you're going to be like the Grateful Dead. You won't sell a lot of records, but you're going to have rabid fans 25 years from now. He was so on the money. And now it's How to Buy Boss Skaggs, the master craftsman of blues and soul. Pop, having always been driven by new sounds, beats, and words for new generations, it's the radical disruptors and innovators who get the biggest props. But even the Berries, Beatles, and Hendrixes cut their snazzy new cloth from fabric homespun over time by the weavers who preserve, evolve, and deepen the music. So, to William Boz Skaggs, a footnote to the canonical history chaptered by the revolutionary Big Beast, but also the creator of some of the warmest, most gorgeous music you'll ever hear. Having cut his teeth in various U.S. blues crews, he wound up in London, soaking up future inspiration in the soul, jazz, Soho of Georgie Fame and the Blue Flames, then cut loose to busk around the globe. In 1965, making an obscure debut LP in Sweden, reunited in 1967 with Texas high school pal Steve Miller in his new San Francisco-based band and cutting two psych classics, Children of the Future and Sailor. Skaggs then split to do his own rootsier blues rock thing, spreading his wings stylistically in the early 70s and, like Van Morrison, leading a Ray Charles / Bobby Bland B.B. King-style R&B band. He commanded cult status among roots rock connoisseurs before rebooting to slick blue-eyed R&B, a class act rewarded in 1976 with the hit-packed Silk Degrees, a peak L.A. AOR classic. That multi-platinum Platters Sessionaire roll call birth Toto, and it's a measure of bandleader Skaggs that he's always attracted and gelled top drawer talent, groove-steeped musical aces on the same page as a fellow craftsman who first and foremost cares for the music as he cares for his voice. He's that rare bird who sang better at 56 than 26, and only lastly cares for career, fortune, and fame. In the 80s, the hits and songwriting, well, no longer overflowing. Skaggs spent a lot of time doing flat nothing, only to return the following decade alongside the likes of Donald Fagen on stage and the cream of sessionaires on record, his releases increasingly weighed toward covers, and his burgeoning interpretive talent, but always deeply pleasurable. If Skaggs started out as he did so many others in the 60s as a guitar-skilled white boy bluesician, in recent decades, he's grown into rock and roll's Old Blue Eyes, 2003's But Beautiful, and 2008's Speak Low, rival Rod Stewart's take on the Great American Songbook, a beautifully grained and seasoned voice endowing losers with the bittersweet glamour of winners. Losers, he said in 2001, are more interesting to explore than winners, the way that we experience things with their ups and downs. And ain't that the blues? And of course, Mojo Magazine picked Silk Degrees as the number one Boss Skaggs album.
alongside Asia and Corden Spark, here's 70s LA session musicians doing an immaculate job on brilliant material. In keyboardist, co-writer, and arranger David Pache, Skaggs found his musical other half. The LA studio brat brought aboard drummer Jeff Porcario and bassist David Hungate, the nucleus of future hitmakers Toto, and no mere jumped-up engineer-producer Joe Weisert was a song doctor, fixing melody, groove, and style, with every track a jewel of clutter-free clarity. The hooks jump out, lowdowns bass and flute licks built to a masterpiece of pop-funk engineering, while Porcario drives the Fats Domino-inspired irresistible sing-along Lido Shuffle. What Do You Want the Girl to Do is the fourth great Alan Toussaint's tune in three successive Skaggs albums, and Harbor Lights and We're All Alone slow dance us to Smooching Time, a carefree top-down summer classic catching the U.S. bicentennial moment and selling 5 million copies. And here's a little bit of the song Lowdown by Boss Skaggs. Classic album review this week is an album most people are familiar with, and that is the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour. When many of us hear the words Magical Mystery Tour, we think of the Beatles' quirky and critically panned film. Actually, quite good. While it's rarely listed among the band's top albums, Magical Mystery Tour is certainly up there with the Beatles' best work. There was some internal debate about which track listing to include in this column. After all, the original UK release of the film soundtrack comprised two EPs with the six songs from the soundtrack: Magical Mystery Tour, The Fool on the Hill, Flying, Blue Jay Way, Your Mother Should Know, and I Am the Walrus. And these columns have focused on the original UK releases, not the U.S. versions. However, the U.S. version of Magical Mystery Tour featured five of the band's 1967 singles that were not included on regular albums: Hello Goodbye, Strawberry Fields Forever, Penny Lane, Baby You're a Rich Man, and All You Need Is Love. This version of Magical Mystery Tour was later adopted in the U.K. as well, making the U.S. LP part of the band's official album catalog. That's a long and complicated way of saying we'll include those five songs here. Ever busy, the four lads had quite the summer of 1967. After finishing Sgt. Pepper's in April, they founded their company, Apple Music Ltd., on May 25th. 1 month later, they represented Great Britain on the Our World program, performing a new song, All You Need Is Love. They traveled to Greece in July with plans to buy an album, an island. It didn't happen, and took a course on meditation in Wales. But it was on August 27th that their world turned upside down. Their manager, 32-year-old Brian Epstein, died after swallowing a fatal cocktail of sleeping pills and alcohol. Still, they carried on, entering the studio to begin recording six new songs for their upcoming film, which was to be completely improvised. Paul McCartney based both the film and its title track on memories of surprise trips that he took as a child, though there are plenty of references to a different sort of trip in this trumpet-infected tune. After all, he was in a rock and roll band in the 1960s. Paul finds one of the most alluring hooks in the band's history as his voice takes on a bit of an edge and he sings, "The Magical Mystery Tour is waiting to take you away." Here's some of that song, "Magical Mystery Tour" by the Beatles. Once again, that's all the time that we have for today. Please join me next week when I continue reading articles from the April 2025 issue of Mojo Magazine. Start off with an article about Kim Deal of the Pixies, the Breeders, and the Amps. In a review of Who Believes in Angels by Elton John and Brandi Carlile. An obituary of the last member of the band, Garth Hudson, who died January 21st of this year. Classic album review of Texas Flood by one of my guitar heroes, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Until then, this is Andy Bombeck for Mojo Music saying so long and keep rockin'.